Hello, welcome to the Basketball Soapbox. I'm your host, Daniel Daly. This is season 3, episode 2 here. We're going to be taking a look at the opening week in the NBA. A lot of basketball opening up the NBA season this week. A lot of entertaining things. Let's get right into it. I'm going to start with the Boston Celtics starting five here. I love the way this team is looking right now in terms of on the offensive end. Porzingis has been the biggest impact so far. The ability to spread the floor, the ability to open up the driving lanes for Tatum and Brown. And you're just seeing the dynamics of this starting five. In the Knicks game, Porzingis got off to a red hot start. I believe he had 15 in the first quarter. Continued to build that on throughout the game, kind of going up and down a little bit. But maybe just riding off the emotional high. I believe he played all 15 minutes. He played all of the first quarter. Which is unheard of, most likely. I think he was just trying to stick it to the Knicks in that game. And he's been having a tremendous impact in terms of protecting the rim, blocking shots at the rim, shooting the ball. And that's just – it's just a – from his upgrade over, people say, the trade for Smart, of course, that opened up things on the offensive end. But I think the upgrade over Horford to be a little bit more dynamic where – Al Horford is older in his role right now. And we're looking at Porzingis, and it's like he's a better shooter. He can finish at the rim better. He's a better rim protector. Probably not the better on-ball defender like Al Horford is even at this stage of his career. But just in general, the upside of Porzingis right now is paying dividends for the Boston Celtics. And I love it. Just from the standpoint of that, it opens up things. It seems like him and Tatum, even in that Knicks game as it was getting late, had a good two-man game. Like Jason Tatum trusted him to make those shots late in the game, trusted to find him on those double teams from the New York Knicks. And that paid dividends for the Boston Celtics. Now moving to the Heat game, it was kind of up and down, but Jason Tatum did his thing. Porzingis added on points there a little bit late, but the dynamic of Jrue Holiday and Derek White, we saw in this game here, Jrue Holiday on the defensive end, even attacking the glass. I believe he had 10 rebounds in that game. Derek White really showing what he can bring to the table, even in those situations where even he's not relied to score on. He's not relied to score. Porzingis, Tatum, Brown, those guys had it going in the game, but Derek White added his impact in the game. And you saw that, especially at the start of the fourth quarter. I believe he knocked down three threes and was able to, I think he had 12 in the quarter. But just looking at what Derek White brings to the table, where in the offseason he was told, hey, we're going to big up your role. We're going to start leaning on you to run the offense, be the point guard. And even with the addition of Jrue Holiday, you're seeing the impact that Holiday and Derek White have, especially on the defensive end and now on the offensive end. Jrue Holiday is going to provide that offensive and secondary playmaking, of course, Derek White as well. But now those guys can potentially step up and score 20 points a game, be able to lead the offense on that certain in those certain points of the game, taking the pressure off of Brown, taking the pressure off of Tatum, taking the pressure off Porzingis, where those guys are a little bit more trusted, Holiday and White, to score now, where they can create their own shots. And I think that's something the Celtics didn't have a lot over the past couple of seasons. It's usually just Brown and Tatum, Al Horford to a certain part of the degree, but usually on spot up threes. But now you have that flexibility of Derek White, Jrue Holiday, Porzingis in the starting five. So now that takes the pressure off Brown and Tatum, where they don't have to make everything happen. They don't have to create every play. It's going to come down to those guys ultimately at the end. But right now you're seeing this team really gel well offensively. Looking at things from the defensive side of the ball, I think this is a good starting five defensively. And the Celtics have always been pretty good defensively in those realms. They just have to hold up on that end of the floor a little bit more. Now you got Holiday with White, arguably probably the best defensive backcourt in the NBA. Brown and Tatum, they both said they want to make a defensive team this year. So now you have that impact of that. And now just the rim protection of Porzingis, where even though Al Horford, I believe he got a block last season a game, you're now looking at Porzingis, where he got, I believe, 4 blocks in the Knicks game and had a couple blocks the other night. So you're getting that all facets of your defense on the perimeter and on the interior. It's not as easy to score. So looking at it from that perspective, the Boston Celtics are rolling on all cylinders. Now, the only question marks I would have for the Boston Celtics so far, and it's only 2 games, of course, but just looking at what we've seen in the first two games is just who on that bench is going to step up. Is it going to be Al Horford? He was able to provide a couple threes in, against the Knicks, but then wasn't able to score against the Heat. Did have 10 rebounds, but it's like, who on the bench right now? A lot of people are hoping that's Peyton Pritchard, who just got paid. You're looking at O'Shea Brissett, who had a nice impact against the Miami Heat there, had a couple energy plays. But looking from the Boston Celtics perspective, looking at rebounding, especially in the Knicks game where they gave up a bunch of offensive rebounds, even to the Heat, defensive play doesn't end until you grab the rebound. And that's something that has been talked about from Charles Barkley, Dwight Howard, great rebounders, great teams in the NBA. Defensive rebounding, that's how you end the possession. And the Celtics have been giving up a lot of offensive and second chance points so far in the two games. But that has been something over the history of the Boston Celtics, especially for the last decade. When you look at their games, they give up a lot of second chance points. So even though our defense is solid, it's like that's the last stitch right there. And that's something that we miss with Robert. People have said that we're going to miss with Robert Williams, who was in and out, but a good defensive rebounder. Good offensive rebounder. So well, the Celtics are still trying to find that part. And that's something that's going to be over the course of the season, if they can figure that out. Obviously, it's going to be gang rebounding. It was nice to see Horford get 10 rebounds, which he doesn't normally do. Holiday also added 10 rebounds. Porzingis is roughly close to 10, but not there yet. So it's going to be definitely something to watch. Those are the two things, the bench and rebounding. Who's going to be able to step up on the bench for the Boston Celtics and who's going to be able to rebound? I think that's one of the things that's going to, even despite our offense and defense being pretty good, giving up those second chance opportunities seems to be the Achilles heel for us right now, so far early in the season. But the Celtics starting five has been awesome so far. I love what I'm seeing. Hopefully they can continue to build. I believe they play Monday night. So that's another game that we'll be watching. Let's move on here to out west to the Los Angeles Lakers with the Anthony Davis and LeBron James dilemma. Now, we all saw the opening game with the Denver Nuggets. the Denver Nuggets continuing to toast the Los Angeles Lakers out there in the Western Conference, especially in Denver. And, of course, all the talk about that game was Anthony Davis's inability in the second half, scoring 0 points. I believe he had one rebound and one assist in the second half. And of a player of his caliber, especially after last season with the Western Conference final sweep, all the offseason talking, the parade talking from the Denver Nuggets, Anthony Davis addressing that in media day, opening the season and stuff like that, and saying how he's been thinking about the Nuggets. They've been doing a lot of talking, and to come out like that in that first game, basically embarrassed on national TV, kind of how he was last year's season. And even though he played well in last year's Western Conference Finals, you can just see that he was a level below the Joker. So now coming into opening night, everyone's expecting Anthony Davis to flip the script, stop the Joker, slow him down. Did not happen. The Joker had an easy 20-point triple-double. And you're looking at Anthony Davis, who had 17 in the first half, who was doing everything points-wise. But over the course of the game, I was like, he was not playing enough force. He's not playing with enough impact, even though he's matching the Joker scoring-wise. Impact on the game, it necessarily wasn't there. And I don't know if it was the Mountaineer in Denver, which usually gets the players and stuff like that, or just the impact of having to try to cover everything up defensively for the Los Angeles Lakers. Anthony Davis was a no-show, got killed by the media the next day, especially Stephen A. Smith. Everyone's just – it's – expecting Anthony Davis to take this next step in being a franchise player, right? Like being able to be consistent on a nightly basis. And then flip that to the next game against Phoenix. He goes out and scores 30, gets 13 rebounds, stuff like that. And on TNT, the TNT crew was Shaq, Ernie, Kenny, and Chuck, where Kenny and Chuck were saying, hey, we know you can do that against these lower level teams, especially with Phoenix, who was without Beal and Booker. We know you're capable of doing that to that type of team. Can you do that against Joker is the question. And Shaq was like, hey, he did what he needed to do. They won the game. They did what they needed to do. But looking at it, it's like the Lakers, first of all, the Lakers, especially with Anthony Davis, there's no your nemesis right now is the Joker. That is the guy that you have to defeat. Everybody else in the Western Conference you can handle at your position, at the front court position. Looking at against Denver, you play well, but not well enough to match the Joker's impact. And that's what the Lakers need on a nightly basis for Anthony Davis to potentially get back to the Western Conference Finals, get back to the finals, get to a championship. Understandably, and I think that's something that Anthony Davis is going to have to show and battle throughout this whole season, right? That's what his Lakers tenure has been. Everyone talks about the bubble, how he looked inside the bubble, how everything was just clicking for him at that point in time on all sides of the ball, both sides of the ball. But now you're looking a couple years and it's just seeing, you're seeing some of these inconsistencies. You're seeing a couple drop-offs. Even though he does show up, you're not seeing him take that next step, that next level to be that guy. And I think that's something, especially with LeBron James now in year 21, which I'll get to that in a moment. You're looking for Anthony Davis to take the keys to the car and drive the Los Angeles Lakers. Because in order for them to reach that level that they want to get back to, he has to do that. He has to do that on a nightly basis, and especially he has to do that against the Joker. He has to, in order for the Lakers to have any shot. Now, looking at the LeBron James situation, looking at the Phoenix game, him and Anthony Davis played the whole fourth quarter, combined for 23 points. Anthony Davis had 13. LeBron had 10 in the quarter to just scrape by the Phoenix Suns, 195. And I looked at it in the Denver game, and in the Phoenix game, it actually happened, right? Like where LeBron James was able to come in and able to help the Lakers put away that game. In the Denver game, it was like the game was slipping a little bit. You can see that the Lakers weren't going to grasp and catch on. And I was just sitting there and I'm like, you can't expect the Los Angeles Lakers to keep depending on LeBron James in year 21. It is insane. It's not going to work. And if the Lakers think that's their best option to kind of manage LeBron's minutes and then all of a sudden unleash him at this point in time in his career, like a boxer who comes out and measures their opponent, gets data over the course of the fight, and then all of a sudden in round 6, 7, 8, you take him into those deep waters and then you turn the tables on him. That's not going to happen. They're Los Angeles Lakers. That's not going to happen. There's no nights off in the Western Conference. And the guys on TNT also said that there's no nights in the Western Conference. They named Portland, but then you get through all the other teams. The Utah Jazz are pretty good. The Spurs with Wembanyama, who I'll talk about in a little bit, is pretty good. You got the Dallas Mavericks, who can provide matchup problems. OKC, who even though is a young team, has SGA, who I'll also talk about a little bit. SGA, Chet Holmgren, Jalen Williams, Cason Wallace, who's also a nice rookie. So you got all these guys. We got all these teams in the Western Conference, and it's like you're looking. And I didn't even name the top teams like the Nuggets, the Warriors, the Kings, the Suns when they get healthy. All these teams in the Western Conference, it's like you're not going to have any nights off. And for the Los Angeles Lakers to still be depending on LeBron James in year 21 to scrape by the Suns, and these are wins that they are desperately needed, right? Like nobody's going to remember these early games or anything like that. But just speaking about them, these are games that they're going to have to win. And if they're going to continue to play with this type of game plan strategy, it's not going to work. It's just not going to work. It's not going to help you guys. And of course, you want to try to grab these wins while you can. But if you have to scrape by against a Suns team without Bradley Beal, without Devin Booker, and win by 5 points, that's going to be tough. That's a tough recipe in the Western Conference, let alone you have to go play the Eastern Conference, who has some good young teams, who I'll talk about in a minute. But it's just like looking at Los Angeles from that standpoint, if that's the game plan to try to have Anthony Davis be heroic and then have LeBron James come in the last 5 minutes and try to win the game, save the game, that's not going to work. I believe LeBron James was sitting there and he said, hey, I think it was to Phil Handy. I think it was one of the assistant coaches or Darvin Ham, where he was like, you know, I can play point guard. And I kind of got the feel that he was saying that the ball was kind of sticking with D'Angelo Russell, Austin Reeves a little bit against Denver. That was against Denver, where I think he was like, hey, I can play point guard and get the ball moving, get the guys in these right spots. It was funny because against Denver, D'Angelo Russell just looked off LeBron James, right? Like, just looked him off in a situation where LeBron James was speaking to him, saying, basically, I'm in the high post late in shot clock situations. If I'm at the high post, give me the ball, I can see everything and survey everything and get somebody a good look. Instantly, D'Angelo Russell just takes a shot in that same situation. The shot clock was winding down, but there was still enough time to get the ball to LeBron, and he didn't do that. So there's some issues there, and the Lakers are trying to figure that out. And I don't think D'Angelo Russell is long for the Los Angeles Lakers, and I think people are getting sick of him too as well. So definitely during the trade deadline, we're going to see how that pans out for him. He's obviously, with that contract, everybody was kind of saying he was trade bait. Of course, looking at Kyrie Irving and situation. So we'll see how that situation goes now. But if this is the Los Angeles Lakers game plan, it's going to be interesting to see how it falls out. But if they're going to continue to play like this and try to figure, maybe they're just building themselves. Of course, Vanderbilt has been out, hasn't played yet. But it's just like, if this is the game plan that you guys are going to have, it's not going to work. Okay, let's get on to the rest of the NBA. Of course, everyone's going to talk about the Bucks. Damian Lillard having a great, fantastic start to his Bucks career, scoring, I believe, 39 in that game, 34, something like that, against Philly. And now that dynamic of him, Dame, and Giannis is obviously going to be good. No one's going to ignore that. Looking at Philly, I think Tyrese Maxey and Kelly Oubre are kind of looking around like, we don't need James Harden. Tyrese Maxey has been on a tear, I believe, scoring 30 points back-to-back games. Went off tonight again. Kelly Oubre chipping in again, 20 points. If he's able to do that off the bench in this position here where he really has a chance to make the playoffs and be a good player with the Philadelphia 76ers, I think those guys are looking around like, we don't need James Harden. Hurry up and make the trade and get some guys here that can help our bench unit, and we can go take off with this unit that we have here. But I want to talk about a team that has been really impressive to me and I've been keeping an eye on the past couple years, and it seems like it's coming together here. I want to look at the Detroit Pistons, the young trio of Cade Cunningham, Asar Thompson, and Jalen Duren. These guys, Cade Cunningham's last season was cut short, especially with that. I believe it was a calf injury. I think he broke his calf, shin, and wasn't able to get back on track. But now he has that full offseason. He's coming in playing really well with 22 points per game, 8 assists per game early on. And you're kind of getting that look at why Detroit picked him first. Obviously, he was the best person in that draft, we believe. So to see him come out and play really well so far to start the season in 3 games, it looks like you're getting those Grant Hill vibes in terms of being able to score and being able to facilitate, rebound, and do every little bit of tricks of all trade. But I want to talk about Asar Thompson. I did not see this. Of course, the Thompson twins were coming out of Overtime Elite. Looking at those two guys there, looking at Asar Thompson for the most part, I'm getting – he doesn't have the scoring, it looks like, as yet. That's going to come at some point in time. But the impact defensively that he has, the energy that he plays with, is infectious. And it kind of reminds me of a Sean Marion in terms of his attack on the glass, his ability to block shots, and kind of play that role of a Sean Marion, Tayshaun Prince kind of player for the Detroit Pistons right now. And I'm just loving what I'm seeing from him in terms of what he's bringing to the table. Good young kid in Detroit, Monty Williams. They're 2-1 so far to start the season. Of course, it's early in the season, but I really like what I'm seeing from this trio. As I want to talk about Jalen Duren right now, who I instantly thought in when FIBA was going on and everyone was saying they need a big guy. And I was like, they need to go get Jalen Duren or Mark Williams, who plays for the Charlotte Hornets, because it's like they need some type of glass in the interior, somebody to attack the glass. And what this guy has been doing the first couple of games, 18 points, 15 rebounds, and 2.5 blocks a game, and a double big lineup next to Isaiah Stewart, you're looking at the Detroit Pistons, and it's like this double big lineup in today's NBA shouldn't work. Isaiah Stewart tries to spread the floor and stuff like that, but he's not a consistent knockdown shooter. But to look at Detroit right now and see a double big lineup, with Cade Cunningham, Asar Thompson, they're just being physical and they're getting after it. And I'm loving what I'm seeing, especially from Jalen Duren on the glass, being a double-double force every night so far this season. The Pistons have a really, really, really good young core. and looking forward to it, looking forward to what they're going to be doing future-wise, right? Like, these guys are all young, coming in together. I believe they're all less than 22 years old. And you're just seeing all these little building blocks that Detroit's putting together, and it's like, hopefully this is something that can get Detroit back into a playoff position and potentially being a force in the East, potentially down the line with the Orlandos, the Pacers and stuff like that. Those, these young teams that are continuing to build, and we're going to see these teams on the rise here. They have a really good young core, I think, and hopefully the injuries don't get in the way. That's all you're hoping for, especially with Cade Cunningham and his injury last season. You're hoping injuries don't happen to this team. So far, I think Bogdanovich is out for them so far to start the season. But these guys have been able to patch it up and been able to do all right so far to start the season. And it's just something that I'm looking at opening week, looking at the Detroit Pistons. And I like their young core, what they're doing. Moving on to the Indiana Pacers. Wow, man, that high-octane offense of Indiana led by Tyrese Halliburton has been – cooking so far to start the season, and this was one of the teams that I wanted to watch because I felt like this team is on the rise, and people kind of forget that they were a fourth seed last year before Halliburton went down. Of course, the Eastern Conference had some injuries and stuff like that, but just looking at their consistent level of play and how he's getting guys involved, I really liked what he does on what he did last year and what he's going to continue to do, especially after that trade from Sacramento. The feud with Wally Szczerbiak, I believe he's a Knicks correspondent now. That whole thing, him now getting into being an all-star and continuing that role, and he's doing that so far at the start of the season with 20 points and 12 assists a game. Leading this offense, the Pacers scored 143 against the Washington Wizards and 125 against the Cleveland Cavaliers. And, of course, that was without Darius Garland, Jared Allen, and Donovan Mitchell. But it's just looking at what Indiana is continuing to build there with all these guys there that can score. Aaron Naismith, who signed a deal just now, is comfortably above 15 points per game at 16.5. Mathurin, Turner, both, and Brown, both at 15 points a game. And Jalen Smith and Buddy Hield chipping in 13 and 12 respectively. So this team has a lot of scorers, a lot of guys that can create baskets. And with Halliburton, even guys that can't create their own shots like Brown, like a Jalen Smith, he's finding easy baskets for those guys, and those guys are flourishing. Rick Carlisle as the coach, I like that a lot, especially with a young team like this. It looks like he's honing them and bringing them together in this offense where it's just flowing and continuing to get better. Indiana is going to be a force to be reckoned with. Can they defend at a high level? That's what we're going to be. That's what we're going to see. See if they can get to that point in time. See if Toppin can really take off with the addition that they made in the offseason with him. And seeing how that's going to continue to build. I'm very, 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 very intrigued by this Indiana Pacers team. I have been even last season. This season, I want to see them take the jump and stay there and try to be a top seed in the Eastern Conference. I had them in the play-in, but if they're going to continue to play like this, they're kind of like – kind of looking like the East Coast Kings right now, right? We're Sacramento last year with that high-octane offense and everything was clicking so far. But Indiana, I'm very intrigued to see how they play and continue to play. They're a little bit more dynamic, I think, than the Kings. Of course, the Kings, I think, have a little bit more talent. But Indiana, looking at what they're doing right now with that offense and Tyrese Halliburton controlling everything and scoring, I really like what they're doing out there in Indiana. Now let's move on to the San Antonio Spurs, the Wemby special, I'm calling this. And I just want to talk about Victor Wembanyama, who has been dynamic so far in his first couple of games in the NBA, especially with shooting the ball, especially with scoring, protecting the rim, and just being able to do certain things that have us already seeing the flashes of a franchise player, right? He matched the totals of 15 points, I believe, 2 assists and some type of – I can't remember. Along the lines of what Tim Duncan was doing in his debut against the Denver Nuggets all the way back in 1997. So looking at what Victor Wembanyama has been able to do, just been so dynamic with his play, finishing, dunking, dribbling the ball just the way that he's so mobile as a 7'5" guy moving like a guard, being athletic enough to finish at the rim. But the thing that that's sticking out with me with Victor Wembanyama, it seems to be his competitive spirit, even in a young age, being out there so mature, knowing the moment, wanting the ball in certain moments, especially in the fourth quarter. We saw that against Dallas, and we seen it the other night there against Houston, against Alphonse Sengun. I don't want to leave that out, but during the stretch of those games, he was able to play a big impact for the Spurs, and you can see the level of play from him that is showing signs of a superstar, right? Like, we know the height, we know he has shooting ability, we know we have the dribbling, but it seems like he has that engine, he has that fire in his belly to want to be that guy. And I joked on the Mr. Vincent, well, it wasn't joking, in the Mr. Vincent podcast, I looked at it and I was like, this team has Devin Vassell, Keldon Johnson, Jones, Jeremy Sochan, Doug McDermott. If Wembanyama can be that guy that can be a game changer like he's looking to be so far in the season, and really not having any idea of how far the season, how to be consistent on a nightly basis like that yet, just seeing him be a young player in the league, a rookie, if he's able to have this impact that he's having right now with 18 points per game, nearly 10 rebounds and two blocks, and he can deal with the physicality on a night-to-night basis and get in there and battle and be able to do that, can the Spurs make the play-in? Can they? I joked around. Again, I don't want to say I joked, but I was kind of sitting there, like, pondering, thinking about it. Like, I can see in a world where the Spurs couldn't make the play-in in the Western Conference, despite how competitive it is. This Spurs team is not that bad to where they don't have professionalism. They don't have guys that can get it done like a Devin Vassell and Keldon Johnson. Those guys showed that they can play. And with Greg Popovich as the coach, kind of mentoring all of this, fostering all of this, building all of this, is there a way that I can see him get to the play-in? They have no incentive to win, clearly, but it's not going to hurt. It's not going to hurt this team's development in terms of what Victor Wembanyama is going to bring to the table and what Greg Popovich is about. And people are sitting there saying, oh, well, you know, he's sucked the past couple seasons. Of course, that whole Rashad McCants things. People actually believe that shit. But looking at what he's been able to do so far hasn't been impressive. And to see if he can continue to do this over, I think he's going to be in the realm of somewhere between 65, 70 games. If he can continue to do that, the Spurs, they can figure out how to get into the play, and it's going to get interesting. Just to see his career development and what he's going to be, I'm intrigued by the Spurs. I like what they're doing. I like what I'm seeing down there. Now, to get to somebody that Victor Wembanyama played on opening night, we have Luka Magic. Luka Doncic, the Dallas Mavericks. Luka is just something to behold. He had a good game against the Spurs, but against the Nets the next night, the next game against the Nets, he was just unhinged, right? Unleashed. And his ability to score is unmatched and not be stopped. Like, he is being, his creativity, his shot making, his tough shot making ability. If you haven't seen the highlights against the Nets, I believe they had a 126-120 win. I believe he had four clutch threes to seal that game. His ability just to score, know the moment, and be that dynamic of a player has me kind of looking at my playoff predictions, because I had them just on the outside of the play, and I just thought it wasn't going to work. I didn't know how the big man was going to work, if this is going to last with Derek Lively the second, I believe. He's playing really well for the Dallas Mavericks so far throughout two games. Looking at how Kyrie Irving's kind of taking a back, not necessarily, well, taking the back seat to Luka Doncic, letting Luka run the show, picking his spots, seeing how Grant Williams is still continuing his shooting prowess there in Dallas, shooting 40%, above 40% from three. Seeing what this team is doing and Luka playing the way he is, they have a chance to be good. And if they can hold up defensively and figure out those things on the defensive side of the ball, they have a chance to be good. Tim Hardaway Jr. is also playing well for them, but led by Luka and seeing how this team is kind of fostering and building around him, Dallas can be really good. And I'm not going to sit there and say they're going to get to be a top four seed or anything like that, but they're going to be doing better than what I expected if they can continue this level of play, especially with Luka. So looking at it from that perspective and seeing his performance, if he's able to hold this up like he's been doing, and Kyrie and Grant Williams and Derek Lively and Tim Hardaway Jr. and all these other guys are able to contribute, Josh Green as well, it's going to get interesting for the Dallas Mavericks. And Luka has been sensational, making off-balance, one-hand push shots from three while contested. I can't believe what I'm seeing from that guy. He's just continuing to impress me as his career is going on. And he's so young in his career, and he's been so dynamic and so impactful. That's why he's a franchise guy. No question, that's why he's a franchise guy. To see him continuously just put up these godly numbers, triple doubles roughly. He's averaging 41 points so far through two games. He understands early in the season, but those points are going to come down. But the assist and rebounds should be around where they're going to be. The points should be around 30 points per game. His ability to be this dynamic is scary. It is really scary to see how he's able to play night to night like this. And no one's able to stop him. No one's able to get this guy off balance to make him uncomfortable. Like, it's like Luka is only going to have a bad game if he's arguing with the officials and shooting badly, shooting poorly. Like, that's the only way to stop him. I think the only way to stop him is if he gets in his own head and he gets off his own game. That's the only way that happens. And just to see Luka play like this at this level is going to be an interesting season in the Western Conference for sure. Let's move on to more noticeable things from opening week. The Cleveland Cavaliers. Injuries to Darius Garland, Jared Allen, Donovan Mitchell, who's been on my fantasy team, is having a great season so far through two games. But I believe they played the third tonight, but they lost. Yeah, they lost. But just looking at the hamstring injuries to Darius Garland, hamstring injury to Donovan Mitchell, and now Jared Allen has a bone bruise in his ankle, his left ankle. So those injuries don't pan well for the Cleveland Cavaliers. I don't like that. Going forward for them, hopefully they're able to get out of this injury bug. Evan Mobley was able to score 33 tonight. So if his offensive game is going to somehow grow when Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell come back and then Jared Allen fits in the fold, how that's going to look on the court for them, the addition of Max Strus has really been beneficial to them. So it's going to be interesting to see when he gets back, those guys get back, how they fit in that fold. But if Evan Mobley can benefit while these guys are out, especially Josh Allen, and continue to lead the offense a little bit like that and continue to improve, be a little bit more aggressive on the offensive side of the ball, that's going to bode well for Cleveland. But these injuries, hopefully they're not going to be knick-knack injuries throughout the season. Moving on to the Sacramento Kings. The Sacramento Kings can't close, right? Like last season, that was a big Achilles heel for them. Against the Warriors. You saw it over the course of that series. They just weren't able to get it done. Then the preseason, there was a game where their starters were playing a lot of minutes and they were facing the Warriors, and they blew that game. They couldn't close. And then just the other night, Steph Curry and De'Aaron Fox, newly Curry brand signed athlete, had a duel for the ages. And Steph Curry's just he owns Sacramento right now, right? Like kind of like LeBron owns Toronto. Steph Curry owns Sacramento. Steph Curry with 41 points, De'Aaron Fox, of course, battling with 39. But Sacramento just can't close those games. And that's something that's going to be a watch for me over the course of the season, where last season everybody was unexpected, didn't know what there was going to be, and saw that rise over the course of last season. Especially they have their defensive woes. That's always going to be a problem with Sabonis at the five and just the dynamic of their team. But looking at their ability to close games. That's going to be the next step in their development, right? They're able to run their offense, get everything going. But when their offense slows down, when they get stopped, how are they going to close games? And that's something that I feel like Indiana is going to have to, I call them East Coast Kings. I feel like that's something that Indiana is also going to have to look at and figure out a way to do that as well. But I think that's the next step in their development. They got De'Aaron Fox. They got Sabonis, the All-Stars. They got that young team to the playoffs. They battled the defending champions. Now, how do you take that next step? Where's that next step for the Sacramento Kings? That's the thing. Can they close games? Can they finish games? Can they put the foot on the neck? That's the growth in their development. Hopefully they're able to figure out, because if they don't, they're going to be a fun, entertaining team and not going to be able to develop much more. And that's going to suck. So got to see how that develops over the course of the season. I'm going to be looking at that close games within 5 minutes, 5 points within the last 5 minutes and stuff like that. Definitely going to be looking at that for the Sacramento Kings. Definitely. Moving on to the Memphis Grizzlies, who started off 0-3. They lost tonight. We don't know when Brandon Clark is going to be back. Steven Adams was ruled out before the season with knee injury. Ja Morant's obviously out now. What, 22 games left for his suspension? He should be back around Christmas time, around the end, early December, mid-December, somewhere around there. But I had a question for Memphis with everything going on. Should they trade for Robert Williams? Now, Robert Williams has been out with his own injuries. I believe they're trying to build him back up and get him acquainted to what they're doing in Portland. I think they're just going to try to trade him. I think that's ultimately the move. But with the lack of front court and relying on Jaren Jackson Jr., who's usually in foul trouble, could the Memphis Grizzlies trade for Robert Williams? And I'm thinking about that because we saw defensively what he's been able to do at Boston. It's a health thing. We know that. But potentially, especially for the Memphis Grizzlies, who I thought was going to do really well this season, even with the 25-game suspension of Ja Morant, Marcus Smart's not that has been building his way into that lineup. I think he's been playing well, but they just don't have enough offensive firepower right now, especially with Ja Morant out. But defensively, it's like, especially with Jaren Jackson Jr., who gets in the foul trouble, can you get Robert Williams in there and kind of patchwork that front line where at least you know you have two defenders that can kind of battle on the boards? Not Jaren Jackson Jr. I'm talking about Robert Williams if he comes to the team, of course. But shot blocking, rim protection from two guys like that, can you patchwork that defense and kind of rough up the game enough to where Ja Morant comes back? Now you have that flexibility. If you want to play Jaren Jackson at the five, you can do that. Now, if he gets into foul trouble, you can move to Robert Williams and have somebody out there that can protect the rim and rebound to a certain degree and play better defense. Now, that's another thing I'm looking at. It's like, can that defense hold up and junk up enough of the game to give themselves those 50-50 wins, right, where they can get those games that they relied on their defense, their offense was crap, they have a couple guys hit some shots, and that can upgrade their offense. And especially with Ja Morant coming back, having Robert Williams as a lob threat, I think that's a potential landing spot for Robert Williams. And I think Memphis should be looking at him because that front court is brutal. Brutal right now without Steven Adams and Brandon Clark. And his contract's pretty good, so that's not going to mess up your cap or anything like that. I think they have a Dylan Brooks trade exception that they possibly could use in a trade with that, and I think Portland could look to do something with that. I don't know, but it's just something that it's a glaring need for Memphis right now. They need good players. They're not trying to tank the season or anything like that. Of course, they're trying to get Ja Morant, wait for that Ja Morant suspension to come out. But I think adding Robert Williams could be something that they should be looking at. Obviously, they should be looking at. Moving on to rookie watch. Brandon Miller has been solid so far and with the Hornets. I believe he's at 15 points per game, but shooting the ball well outside from what he did in summer league, which everybody was like, is he going to be able to make shots? Everybody was worried, but it looks like everything's settling down. He's getting good minutes playing next to LaMelo and guys around him. He's able to find his shot and be consistent, at least so far, to start the season. Moving on to Scoot Henderson, who we thought was going to struggle a little bit, right? Even with the ball in his hands and stuff like that, it's going to be struggling to find his shot because teams are going to say, hey, beat a switch a jump shot. So he's been able to get a little couple open jumpers and stuff like that, but hasn't really been knocking him down. He did mention that he's working with Malcolm Brogdon, who apparently has been good in his mentorship role with this team, has been able to come in and play all right. Been mentoring Scoot Henderson, apparently giving him advice and stuff like that. So that's good to see. And we can only hope that Scoot Henderson's career continues to go up. Asura Thompson, who I talked about earlier, has been dynamic for the Detroit Pistons so far early in the season. Derek Lively, who has been apparently the perfect role mate for Luka Doncic in his finishing ability and stuff like that. So seeing him do that for Dallas, and especially with all the shooters around them, they can have that dynamic where they can put him on the floor and put him in position to do that. And he's going to be relied upon very heavily for the Dallas Mavericks. So if they found that guy secretly when everybody questioned what that pick was, and seeing him play well next to Luka, that's something that hasn't happened, right? Like, we knew Maxi Kleber was there. He had injuries and stuff like that. Dwight Powell's solid. But the issue was Porzingis, and people were like, does anybody play well next to Luka? Kyrie Irving and him weren't really there. I believe they were under 500 and struggled to be above 500 when they played together, even though injuries kept them apart mainly. Kristaps Porzingis was the sore spot with that, where everybody was like, you can't play with Porzingis, who spreads the floor and blocks the shots and should be dynamic around next to Luka. And that fell short. So to see Derek Lively be able to be a role man, not necessarily have to have the ball and be that big in that Mavericks offense with Grant Williams, who's been able to spread the floor nicely, Luka, who's been crazy this season, Kyrie Irving, who's going to obviously make his name known, having that contract security and stuff like that, you know, he's going to be coming on over the course of the season. So it's going to be interesting to see that. But if he's able to fill that role, that's going to be good for the Dallas Mavericks going forward. Another guy, Cason Wallace in OKC. OKC just finds all these guys, right? Jalen Williamson's both of them. Isaiah Joe. Josh Giddey. Cason Wallace, add him to the list. He's doing pretty good out there in OKC and playing well for them. Chet Holmgren. Don't forget about Chet Holmgren. He had 7 blocks and a double-double the other night. You can't forget about what he's doing. And I saw the game with him and Wemby in the preseason, and thought, if this is a battle, and now add Alfred Sengun to that for the Houston Rockets, that's a nice trio in the Western Conference, in the same division, at the center spot, at the big man spot, the front court. If those guys are going to be with their teams respectively for a decade, bring it on. Like, that is something that I don't think people are looking at, but it's like that young trio of bigs for Houston, OKC, and Spurs respectively. That's something that's going to be entertaining and something cool to watch. I really like those guys' game. Sengun is kind of like another Sabonis, where he's able to do a little bit more athletic. He had a big jam the other night as well. But Chet Holmgren, Wemby, the ability to protect the rim, the ability to spread the floor, the ability to finish at the rim. It's going to be fun to watch those guys for the next 10 years or so. So definitely looking forward to that as well. But opening week has been fantastic. Basketball is back. I'm loving all of this. Games are going to continue this week. And I'm going to continue to do my rankings throughout the season. This is not going to be a power rankings or anything like that, but just the way that I had teams positioned to finish the season. The Eastern Conference and Western Conference predictions, I did post that on TikTok. And shorts on YouTube, so check those out. But I'm going to actually be giving in-depth videos to that over the course of the season. I'm going to try to break it up. It's a little hectic right now with everything going on. But I felt like I had to get this out, especially with opening week, all this basketball that's going on. Love seeing all this going on, happening. Promising prospects, their potential, you're seeing it display on the floor. It seems like everything's just smooth right now. Like, all the teams that you expect to be struggling, but all the other teams that you think are competing, it's so early in the season, of course, but you're seeing these dynamic teams. You're seeing players that you like. Basketball, it's fun, man. Thank God it's back. But that will do it for this episode 2 of season 3. Of course, continue to check out Ring Takes. I'm working on a logo for that, so that's going to be fun to actually have that producing and coming out. And continue with this WWE, AEW, continue with the NBA predictions and over the course of the season, looking to have some guests on, stuff of that nature. But that will do it for this episode of the Basketball Soapbox. Thank you guys for joining me. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe if you like what you're seeing. Always like, comment, and subscribe. I like the engagement that I'm getting on videos, even on TikTok, Instagram, stuff of that nature. Thank you so far for the support. And until next time.